Should you take a baby aspirin every day? This has been done for a long time by some people. We didn't really know why we were doing it sometimes, but we'd say nowadays there's some pretty good evidence to tell you the answer, so stick around. Welcome to Talking with Docs.
I'm Dr. Paul Salza.
I'm Dr. Brad Wing. We have a guest.
Mike Heffernan.
He's back. Our cardiologist is back.
So today we're going to talk about what does baby aspirin do, how does it protect your heart, and who actually should be taking it. If you're totally healthy, should you be taking it? So,
and aspirin's been around. I think it's the oldest medication, isn't it?
I think
it was the willow bark. Like Hippocrates said, chew on a piece of bark in 400 BC, get rid of your fever,
nice.
Right? It has been around forever. I think it represents probably one of the first mass-produced pharmaceuticals, too, I think.
There.
Like the 1800s or something like that.
Yep.
And it's probably the most researched drug, too, I would imagine, because it's been around for so many years.
It's gotta be up there.
And the research, believe it or not, is still evolving about aspirin, but we're gonna give you the lowdown on where we're at today.
So can we talk about, Mike, what aspirin is, what it does, and how it plays a role in protecting our hearts?
Sure. So aspirin, acetic salicylic acid. So how does it improve or protect the heart? In patients with established heart disease,
yes.
Let's start there. Patients who have a blocked artery, they've had bypass surgery, they've had an angioplasty. Why do we use aspirin in those individuals? What we want to do is we want to make the platelets less sticky. So we think about the things in your blood. You've got red cells, you've got white cells, and you've got platelets. The platelets are the ones that are going to promote clotting.
Right.
And so we don't want clotting inside a small 2 millimeter coronary artery. We want things to flow through there really well. And if you've got a blocked artery, you can imagine, or a narrowed artery, you want things to flow really well. So keeping the platelets less sticky is the way to go there. So what aspirin does is it inhibits an enzyme on the platelets called cyclooxygenase.
Right.
And if you inhibit the enzyme cyclooxygenase, then you are actually going to have less of something called thromboxane A2. And if there's less thromboxane A2, less sticky platelets. That's the bottom line.
Right.
And so that's how aspirin works. It's irreversible, which
right.
means that if aspirin has inhibited the cyclooxygenase on a platelet, it is inactive irreversibly for the life of that platelet. And platelets last about 10 days or so. And you'll probably come to, you know, alternate dosing of aspirin, and that's why, you know, you might not want to do that. The reason that you take daily aspirin is to inhibit all the platelets every day that are making cyclooxygenase to decrease your risk if you have established disease.
Yeah.
Of course, the trade-off here is you can bleed more because
bleed
the purpose
more.
Of the platelets, one of the purposes is to stop you from bleeding, one of their many purposes. And so if you interfere with their function, the whole point, you don't want them to clot in the artery. The trade-off is, well, then you might bleed when there's a leak in an artery,
yep.
which has its significant consequences as well.
Well, this is the thing about a platelet, too. A platelet has no nucleus. So when a platelet is made, it has these enzymes inside. Aspirin goes inside, and this acetyl group irreversibly binds to it, so it's useless after that. And that's why every day we're turning over about 10% of our platelets. So you have new platelets, and if you're not taking the drug every day, 10% of your platelets can be sticky. And the other problem is that this also plays a role in the pathway of other prostaglandins. So not only does it prevent this platelets from being sticky, but it alters the lining of our vessels of our stomach to increase the risk of bleeding further. So it has a protective role, and that's why we have like COX-2 inhibitors, a special type of pain medication that try to protect us a little bit more. So yeah, there's a lot of science that goes into it. You can't just stop one thing. There's a whole bunch of things, and you have to decide, well, where's
the
risk, the benefit?
As orthopedic surgeons, many of us prescribe a ton of aspirin on the short term after surgery because we want to prevent a blood clot. And we recognize one of the trade-offs is then you could have some bleeding or extra bruising or hematomas. And that's the trade-off is we want to prevent a blood clot, a DVT, which is a devastating complication of a major orthopedic surgery. However, we recognize the complication is bleeding. And other problems with bleeding in the body, you could have a stroke,
yeah.
you could bleed, you could have a bleed in your stomach, you
yep.
could have a bleed just about anywhere.
And what's interesting is something like ibuprofen affects the same pathway, but it irreversibly binds. That's why if you stop your ibuprofen, your platelets can start to work
reversibly.
Again.
Reversibly,
yes.
Yeah.
Reversibly. So when you stop taking it, then ibuprofen will reduce your risk.
But ibuprofen does not provide a cardiac benefit.
Right.
Right?
So because a lot of people are like, well, let's just use something else.
Yeah, we don't use ibuprofen for blocked coronary arteries.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's the yin and the yang, the good and the bad of aspirin. Now let's look at what clinical situations should you be taking a baby aspirin or an aspirin every day?
Yeah.
And what clinical situations maybe it's not beneficial, maybe harmful?
So let's do the no-brainer. Okay. So all, because sometimes this gets confusing for people.
The no-brainer is good for us.
Yeah. So we're always prescribing something like aspirin for the majority of people. They're, you know, it's not 100%, but the majority of people who we describe it, we call it secondary prevention. Somebody who already is known to have coronary artery disease. Right. So we did your CT coronary angiogram and we said, sir or ma'am, you've got 50 and 60 or 70% blockages. Not bad enough to need an operation or bypass surgery or an angioplasty, but you're a person who needs an aspirin a day because we know that you've got narrowed arteries, you're at increased risk of having something happen. The individual who actually needed the angioplasty, the person who had the heart attack, the one who had bypass surgery, they're the ones who all need aspirin daily. And people say, you know, this is not an antibiotic. You're not taking it for 7 or 30 days. Right. This is, it's a lifer for the majority of individuals. And for us too, certainly in all those individuals I've just talked about, especially, you know, I'm on for the coronary care unit today and for this week. It's not just aspirin. We're using other things to inhibit platelets on top of aspirin, but that's a whole other separate story. There are also some people who need a blood thinner, like a more powerful blood thinner other than aspirin, because they might have an abnormal heart rhythm like atrial fibrillation. Right. That's where we're a little fearful of using aspirin plus the other blood thinner for extended periods of time. So there's a lot of science that goes into it. We've kind of worked out what period of time, how long do we do these combos, because the risk of bleeding is up. So we have to balance the risk of having something bad happen with something like abnormal bleeding. And we've pretty much nailed how long the duration of these combo therapies are. But
And the reason you're worried about that is now because clotting in the blood has multiple pathways. And when you've just been knocking out the platelets, you feel comfortable that you have other pathways to kick in if bleeding occurs. But now when you're using another agent that knocks out some of the other clotting pathways, that's what gets you guys nervous.
Absolutely.
Is that, hey, we're going down two different pathways. We're really not giving the blood a chance to stop bleeding if it does start bleeding.
Yep. And there's active ongoing clinical trials looking at newer and newer therapies, all with a major focus of, we're good with how preventative we are being right now, but literally focus on decreased bleeding. And so those are going to be exciting.
And for those people that you're giving aspirin to prevent a secondary event, it's not like they are immune to the complications or the risks of bleeding. It's just the risk of bleeding is less than the benefit you get from taking the aspirin to prevent a secondary event. So that's why it's worth it.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone who's never had a cardiac event, has open coronary arteries, you just don't recommend an aspirin a day for them because the benefit is so small.
So let's talk about that.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, we did this video a while ago.
Yeah.
Even the landscape has changed since then.
Really, over the last couple of years.
Even over the last couple of years. The data hasn't changed, but I think a little bit of the perspective. So I'm happy to address that.
Yes,
if everyone's interested, so there's a fantastic article. It's in 2023. It's accessible. I think it's open access. It's a Canadian Journal of Cardiology.
Okay.
And they had the 2023 update on the antiplatelet guidelines. Okay. There's a lot of stuff in there that's not going to be interesting for people. It's pure cardiology. But there's a really nice section on primary prevention. Should you take aspirin if nothing's ever happened to you before? With the idea of just, you know, I just want to prevent a heart attack. The bottom line is, this has been studied for years, as you guys said, and probably the best analysis happened relatively recently, more than 150,000 patients, randomized clinical controlled trials, half the people got placebo, half got aspirin, and so everyone's blinded, patient doesn't know, doc doesn't know what they're on, the code gets broken in the end, and we find out, you know, was there any benefit?
Well, we love those studies, right? Because
they
can prove causation.
They can't, that's absolutely. And so what's the bottom line? The bottom line is, if you take 1,000 people who have had never anything wrong with them and they're just taking this for prevention, you'll prevent 4 heart attacks.
Okay.
Not death. You'll prevent 4 routine run-of-the-mill heart attacks.
Okay.
Out of every 1,000. But out of that same 1,000 people, you're going to cause 5 major bleeds.
Okay.
3 major bleeds from the stomach, and 1 in 1,000 will have a bleed in their brain. So the purpose of the rephrasing in this article is that, look, we always try, and when we're trying to practice medicine, we're always trying to incorporate the patient's values, the patient's preferences. Maybe somebody doesn't need a hip replacement,
right,
or they don't want a hip replacement, even though you think they do.
100%.
The same holds true for primary prevention and aspirin. Nothing's ever happened to you. you're really worried about your risk of heart attack, you're okay with taking that risk of bleeding. You're okay with the 1 in 1,000 risk of bleeding in your brain because you're more worried about the 4 in 1,000 reduction in heart attack. Not everybody's going to feel that way.
But and there were comments in our older videos, guys, like, listen, these guys are saying, no, don't worry about the heart attack, we worry about the bleed. And it is a bit of a personal decision, right?
It is a personal decision. Look, it's like, look, my mom had a heart attack. Right. My dad died of a heart attack. Yeah. If that's really critical and important to you, and understandably so, it's like, you know what? I'll take my stomach bleed.
Yeah.
Because I want to be that 4 in 1,000 that has a reduction in heart attack. And so the idea of, and more of an emphasis really on patient values and preferences come into play here. And so we're not going to be dogmatic. Yeah. It might be not something that we would choose personally, but it might be something the patient chooses.
No change in mortality in either group.
None. So you do not decrease death. Mm-hmm. You do not decrease death for primary prevention. But if you have an intracranial hemorrhage,
It's probably going to be worse than a heart attack that doesn't kill you.
100%.
Yes.
So if you have an intracranial hemorrhage, you're that 1 in 1,000. You have a 50% chance of dying from that.
Right.
Yeah.
So did mortality increase in the group that took, or was it just not powered enough to look for
It's not powered enough to look for it. But we know from other data sets that if you bleed in your brain, and if it's a significant bleed, you have a 50% chance
it's
of not surviving.
It's worse than a treatable heart attack. Yeah. Sure. That makes sense.
What's the chance of dying with a heart attack?
That's a can of worms. Yeah. So I'll say that on average, between 5 to 10% in the first 30 days, and another 5 to 10% in the first year.
That's all comers.
All comers. Right. All comers. So, you know,
Okay. So better than an intracranial hemorrhage.
Yeah. Way.
So a couple things then. So first of all, let's talk about the dose. So we're talking about a baby aspirin. So originally it was designed for children, so they lowered the dose, and then something called Rye syndrome happened after a bunch of people were taking it for typical viral illnesses. So they said, okay, maybe we shouldn't know kids before 18, unless you have a couple specific disorders, maybe you shouldn't take aspirin. Why did we land on 75 versus 81 versus 100 as the baby aspirin versus full dose aspirin?
I think it really just depends on what country this is being made. So, so Bayer that made aspirin. If you're watching this from Germany, I know it's Bayer. So Bayer makes a 100 milligram tablet.
Right.
If you're in England, it's 75 milligrams.
Right.
If you're in Canada, 81 milligrams.
Right.
It mostly comes down to the regulatory authorities at the time that are approving these doses.
And that was the thought that approximate dose inhibited more than 95% of the platelets, right? Okay, so you don't need a full aspirin, that's the first thing. We talked a little bit earlier about how every other day dosing to reduce your risk of bleeding doesn't work because you get new platelets every day, so don't do that. And then the last thing is, for someone that is trying to stratify the risk, or a patient that you see in your office, how do you weigh, and I'm sure you're gonna tell me that there's a specific survey, obesity versus high blood pressure versus high cholesterol versus family history. How is there a specific kind of algorithm that you can tally up points to say this person now goes from no risk to medium risk to obviously event risk?
So what you're asking about is predictor of risk, right? Predictor of, you know, is something bad going to happen to me, doc? And so there are a variety of risk calculators. None of them are perfect, first thing. They underestimate risk in the young. They overestimate risk in the elderly. Okay. If you are somewhere between 35 and 70, then a common risk calculator is something called the Framingham Risk Calculator. And you can all Google it. And it's going to really look at your age, your gender, your blood pressure, treated, not treated. Are you a smoker? Were you a former smoker? Your family history, and your cholesterol numbers.
Okay.
And those weight doesn't come into that calculator. And then that will give you a 10-year risk, your risk of heart attack, stroke, or death. And it's really categorized as low, medium, or high. And that's a good starting point to, you know, take some information like that to your doctor and say, look, I did this calculation at home. Does this change my management? Is there, you know, do I need to be on a cholesterol pill because of whatever this number is? So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so that's aspirin. I mean, I haven't really cleared it up for you. If you're trying, we didn't really come out and say take an aspirin or don't take an aspirin, but certain situations, it's strongly recommended to prevent a secondary event. However, if you've never had that primary event, that study that you quoted for us will help you decide if you should be taking it.
And I think that's the thing for me, that people need to know that it is not totally benign. You know what I mean? Yep. Oh, it's a baby aspirin once a day, there is zero risk. Well, that's actually not true. So I think that's kind of the take-home message from this. You get to assess your risk, whether it's the risk of waiting to see if you get a heart attack or taking something that may lead to a heart attack or bleed or stroke. And then that's a conversation that you have with your doctor.
And for our patients, we put you on it for like 10, 20, or 30 days after your surgery. So it's not like we're putting you on it for life after a knee replacement or hip replacement. And on the other side, if you're on an aspirin a day, you have to go speak to the anesthetist or the team at your preoperative assessment, because they're going to tell you when to stop it before surgery. Because it, as you can imagine, when we operate on someone, we really rely on the body's ability to stop bleeding because we make an incision. And if you've inhibited your platelets to such a degree that they're really impeded, bleeding may be a problem after surgery. So that's why often before surgery, you'll be asked to stop your aspirin or your other blood thinners a certain amount of time before.
Now you know. If you like this video, please like it. Subscribe to our channel. Share it with someone that you know is maybe thinking about taking a baby aspirin.
And remember, just take two aspirins and call us in the morning.
Maybe don't do that. Don't do that.
Just call us in the morning.
Just call. Maybe don't call.
You are in charge of your own health.
And thanks to Dr. Heffernan for joining us.
My pleasure.
See you next time.